You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson. I'm here at the baseball winter meetings in D.C., and I had great conversations with two Hall of Famers in the journalism world. I'm talking about Peter Gammons and Claire Smith, who became the first female sports writer to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Gammons talks about the goings-on at the winter meetings, while Claire talks about her brilliant career covering baseball. I'm with one of the best baseball writers of all time, Peter Gammons of MLB Network. Peter, thank you so much for being with me. I want to start off by asking you about Claire Smith. She's going to the Hall of Fame. What did you think?
Oh, I'm really happy about that because a great friend. I really respected her when she was working for the Times and in Philadelphia, but she also did a lot with ESPN when I was there, and she would help out on-air people and to give them ideas about journalism and try to give them like a lesson. And it wasn't always, there were things that former athletes didn't want to hear, and she is so smart and such a fine person that they'd end up listening to her when they wouldn't listen to anybody else. And it fascinated me, her ability to reach into the hearts of people who are really good guys, but they didn't want to be told what to think or what to say.
And she covered a high ranking team like the Yankees. I mean, what does that say?
She was a great journalist, and also, though, once again, she never got caught in the crossfire. I mean, when you cover the Yankees or the Mets or the Red Sox, there's a crossfire involved, and she was able to stay above it at all times.
Let's talk about the winter meetings. Any surprises in your mind?
I thought teams would be a little bit more prepared when they got here as far as jumping into trades. Now, we still may see a few, but there was less preparation in the 2 weeks from the general manager's meeting to the... Now, maybe it was because of the basic agreement, but I thought somebody would be 70% of the way there on sale. I thought they'd be 70% of the way on a couple of other guys. So, I mean, Chris Sale could easily end up in Washington tomorrow, but I thought it might happen right at the beginning of the meetings.
You know, we've heard so much about Sale and McCutchen. They've been the talk here. Do you think that deal will happen for both guys?
I think Sale will definitely happen. I think Jerry Reinsdorf wants that to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure that... I think the Pirates are trying to make up their minds about if we don't trade him, how much residue is there left over from bitterness. I mean, he's such a nice human being that, you know, but when they talked to him in the spring and his agent was not interested in discussing the parameters of the deal they proposed at Pittsburgh, it was basically all talks were sort of dropped off. And I don't know, but if they feel that him coming back and being moved to left field would really be a problem, or they could play it out for a year. But so my guess is the trade happens. I would just wonder if it won't happen midway through January or early in February instead.
Do you believe the theory that some people believe he's done as a center fielder, that he belongs in the corner?
He may be. I just think a lot of things happen, though, like when he wasn't hitting. I remember being in Pittsburgh and watching him take batting practice, and it seemed to me that his bat speed was as good as it ever was. And you look at all those stats like line drive percent, they were as good as ever. So, I mean, I think that maybe when he was struggling defensively, I think he was playing more shallow than he had in the past, that he got embarrassed about that, and it maybe affected his hitting because he's a really proud person. And, you know, I've always said that I think sometimes players who are so philanthropic, so sensitive to other people, sometimes the game's tougher for them. They need to be more, who cares, you know. Just go out and play.
I got to ask you, the Red Sox pulled off a trade that somewhat shocked me, Travis Shaw, to Milwaukee. What does that say about Pablo Sandoval?
Oh, I think they're going to give him every shot. Now, they have two guys coming along. They're Moncada, the Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure he's a third baseman, but that's where they're planning on playing. And they have a young kid from the Dominican named Rafael Devers, who's probably the best hitting prospect they have outside of Benintendi. And he is a great third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a year away, but maybe they just figure, well, we'll see what Pablo can do for you. Dan Roach from Channel 4 in Boston has a picture of Benintendi that was taken about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I actually posted on the Twitter, too. And I didn't recognize him. And I thought, what is he going to become a sprinter or something? So, you know, if he can maintain that, because he's a good defensive third baseman when his weight is down, who knows? So one problem they have is that they don't have another alternative right now. And, Brock Holt hits left-handed, but Sandoval doesn't hit left-handed pitchers at all either.
Right.
So I don't know what that means at this point. It would be an amazing story if they ever ended up having good seasons from Ramirez and Sandoval. It would be one of the funniest stories of the year.
Oh, no question. Listen, thank you so much.
Oh, sure.
And you take
appreciate
care.
It.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. This is an honor. I'm here with Claire Smith, who was the first female journalist to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Claire, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me the feeling of being the first female. That's it.
The honor is overwhelming. It's still sinking in after hearing the news just a few hours ago. It carries a lot of history that is a shared history. I was far from being the first woman to cover professional sports.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly far from being the first woman to cover baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa Lutke and Sports Illustrated forced the doors open through a lawsuit. I honor their effort and their persistence. The Yankees made it very easy and accommodated me from the first day I started covering them as a beat writer in 1982. I so appreciated that in that organization. There are so many women I've met along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Susan Waldman, Lisa Saxon, Jane Gross was my mentor on the Yankees beat when I got there. Annette John Hall started in Oakland. My sister from another mother. And the legion of peers who happened to be men who would not countenance any misbehavior from anyone, including our peers, to the players, to the managers, towards their peers who happened to be women. They are countless, and they are my brothers in the BBWA. So 40 years of doing this, 40 plus years,
mm-hmm.
if my math is correct.
That's all right.
Yeah, started at 82, whatever the math is, I'm horrible at math. But I can't name them all, but I want to thank them all. I want to thank the players who always stood up. The Yankees organization, the Mets organization. I want to thank Peter Uberoth, who acted within 24 hours after a particularly bad incident that I had in the postseason in 84 by universally opening the clubhouses, saying, no, this is not a club-to-club-to-club a scenario. Anyone who is properly credentialed has access to all major league clubhouses. It was his first week as baseball commissioner.
Okay.
And he came into the Baseball Writers Association meeting in that postseason was met with a great deal of anger and hostility over the incident and kept saying, "You don't understand. You don't have an issue anymore. This is over. This is done. It's taken care of." And he was telling the truth. That's a long-winded answer to your question.
That's all right. I just want to know, too, what advice would you give to young women who wants to go on this field?
I would say always look ahead to your peers who are younger. The first day you walk in, you're gaining experience. And that experience is valuable not only to you, but to the person who's going to walk in for the first time the day after or the hour after you. Watch, observe, absorb what you see in the veterans around you, the veteran writers, even the veterans from electronic journalism and print media. There's a lot to be learned. There's a lot of teaching you can do. There's a lot of invention you can bring to the game. This business is changing so fast that what you do in 2016, it might not exist in 2017. So why not be part of the group that's going to be the change maker? Always be ready to suggest something new. Be ahead of the curve, because what's speeding towards us, we don't want to be run over by it. Podcasts, did we know what that was 10 years ago? Internet, Twitter, Snapchat, this, that, and the other. Still. The core, the foundation of all of this is the written word. Know how to put a sentence together. Even on Twitter, write a sentence. Write full words. Honor the vocabulary. Be smarter than the folks who snap back at you. You know, use your wisdom, use your knowledge. Shut them down with your knowledge if they're coming at you. Be fair. Always be ethical. Use the morals that you were raised with and the ethics you were taught in school. Use good judgment. Never give anybody an opening to come at you and say, "Told you so, this is a bad person." Your character, no one can assassinate it if you don't give them reason. No matter what you are, be proud of it. One thing my dad taught me, and he's talking about race, but it applies every day to my being a female, is you have to prove what you aren't before you prove what you are.
Right.
It's just a fact of life. So do it, and do it proudly. Someone doesn't believe you belong there? Okay. Prove to them they're wrong by proving that you're not what they think you are. And then have fun proving what you are.
The thing that sticks out with me was especially your relationships with the Yankee players. And you wrote an outstanding book with Don Baylor, I remember. And it was so outstanding. Could you talk about that experience writing that book?
I found Don Baylor to be one of the most intriguing players I've ever covered, because Don traveled throughout Major League Baseball and played for some of the most intriguing and influential managers and alongside some of the greatest players, and had tremendous influence on everybody. He might not be on a plaque in the Hall of Fame, but players looked at him as having the value of a Hall of Fame teammate. So we looked at his life through his eyes at all of these teams, championship teams, pennant races, at the managers he played for, from Earl Weaver to Gene Mock to Billy to Tony La Russa, and the players he played alongside, Clemens and Reggie, Jim Rice, and so on and so forth. And just the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful experiences he had.
I know.
Talk about strength of character, it came through. He has a great sense of humor.
I had a little pride.
And he lived a life. And we ended when he walked off the field as a player in 1988. And darned if he hasn't lived as fascinating a life since. We joke about that all the time. Volume 2, and we need Volume 2.
If you read that book now, it's still fascinating. And especially the things he talks about regarding the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Orioles. I mean, it's very, very interesting, to say the least.
Absolutely. And I learned a lot about life from him. I really did. After he left baseball, he became family.
Mm-hmm.
He's my son's godfather, because I want that kind of great character to be in my life. Mm-hmm. And I still learn every day. Every time I speak with him, I learn from him. And better get to Cooperstown on July 30th, or I'm not going.
Claire Smith, thank you so much. Congratulations again. That's it for The Rocket Show. We'll talk to you next week.